All right, I just want to speak to you this morning about something really close to my heart. And I don't know if Pastor Brad said before, but we're actually about to plant a church in Queensland, you know, as you do. Let's just plant a church. So we run Youth Alive. And I think, did you guys have a United We Stand here? Oh, okay. So last year we, this year, we're still in 2016, aren't we? This year we had an event where we get everyone, like 100 locations right over Queensland, to run over 100 different events, all in local areas where we all, it's like a mini Youth Alive. We just found that as we were trying to do these big events that a lot of the regional people weren't coming, and, you know, God just spoke to Cameron about this whole United We Stand, and so people in all locations around Australia had ran 100 different events, and this year we had 25,000 young people, which I'm like, that's definitely like the largest evangelistic kind of, you know, event for young people. So we started it off in Queensland, and we've done it for the last 3 years, and we had about 9,000 or 10,000 in Queensland, and eventually the rest of the nation's caught on to what it is. So that's really awesome. So we kind of do that on one hand, and then on the other hand, we're planning a church from like nothing. Like when I say nothing, I mean nothing. Like we're not being sent out by anyone, which is like zero. And something that's very, very, very close to the heart of Cameron and I, and our whole kind of ethos of our church is based on this, which is in Matthew chapter 5 about, you know, where God is not a secret to be kept, and we're taking this public, and, you know, we're to be a light on a hill. But right at the end of that, there's this beautiful verse that says that we're to be generous with our lives, and as we're generous with our lives, it will prompt people to open up to God. And right there is the key, right there, because, you know, we think, oh, we've got to outreach to our community and all of that. And yes, we do. But Cameron and I, the word public, it literally means for the people. We are a church by the people, for the people. And we're very passionate about everybody being brilliant at whatever it is that they're called to do out there, not in the four walls in here, what you do out there. And I just want to, and that's why I teach. I teach in a state school just a couple of days a week, because I don't want to be in my four-walled Christian bubble. I'm like, you know what? When we left Adelaide and we moved to Brisbane, the one kind of thing I said to God was, I want to make sure that when we moved to Queensland, I'm not, and, you know, I literally was at the point where I wasn't even meeting people that didn't know Christ. And I just was around Christian people all the time. And so what I want to ask you, a bit of a daunting question, you might, hopefully you can answer this well, but what is your reputation like out there? You know, what is your reputation like in your workplace? Because it's easy to be, you know, really happy and smiley, and, you know, we all let each other into the car park one for one near church, and then we try and get a park at the shops right near Christmas, and you're just like, that's my park! You know, and we can, but then, you know, like when you go to the Christian bookstore, you've got to be polite to the person behind the counter because you're in a Christian bookstore, right? But if you're anywhere else, oh, does it really matter, you know? But it does. What are we like out there? You know, there are people who are never going to set foot into a church. And I've got teachers that I work with. In fact, just yesterday, one of the teachers I work with, now they know what I do outside of school and they can't fathom it. They're like, what do you do? What are you? What are you doing in Sydney this weekend? And they see my Instagram and my Facebook. And I've got one particular teacher that I work with. She's a year four teacher and I love her. And she always says to me, you know, she says things like, oh, so you're like a God person, you know, that kind of thing. I'm like, yeah. Well, on her Facebook yesterday, she'd put a picture. Her brother had died in like 2001. And so every year she kind of puts a big, you know, thing up for him, just remembering him. And she did that yesterday and she really misses her brother. And so I just wrote a comment on there about, I'm thinking of you and, you know, I know this is a really hard time. And then she replied back and I just saw it this morning and she's like, I think I need your words of blessing right now. You know, which is her way of, so I knew what she was saying. She's saying, I need to talk to you because I'm, you know, and I'm like, that's where it's at. That is where it's at, that we are being the light. We're being generous with our lives out there. And there's just three keys and we're going to fly through them in 20 minutes and we're going to do actions, okay? Just because you're going to remember this, okay? I want everyone to go hand. You can actually say it too, hand. Hand, heart, and home. Now, I know you might think, what on earth? I guarantee that if I come back in 12 months, you'll go, I remember you. You're the hand, heart, home person, right? So there's method to my madness. All right, so if you're taking notes, you can write that down, hand, heart, home. My dad is actually not saved. He's not a Christian. And my dad, my parents divorced when I was three. And my dad grew up in church when he was younger, but he's definitely like fallen away from the things of God. He actually used to live here in Sydney. I spent a lot of my life here visiting my dad. He used to live on the north side, and he's actually an artist, an animator. And my dad, he thinks that churches are a cult. And he thinks, I think a lot of it he's gotten from the media. And just the other day, last week, he actually came to stay at my house. Now, my dad never stays at my house, like ever in my life. I've stayed at my dad's house when I visited him, but my dad has never stayed with me, right? So this is really weird for me. I'm like, my dad is coming to stay. This is really weird. And I drove him to his animation conference every, you know, morning and picked him up from the bus stop every night. And you know what? My dad thinks churches are a cult, and he thinks they're just these money-making businesses. And so for me, I know that God spoke to me years ago that the best thing I can do is my dad doesn't respect the church, but I want him to respect me and my life. Because then if he respects me and my life and what we're doing, then just maybe his heart might soften towards God. You know, and so just this week, he stayed in my home. And so we were just very generous with my dad. And that's one of the keys with him. You know, he had, for his 70th birthday at the start of the year, I rang my half-sisters and I'm like, what are you getting him for his birthday? And they're like, oh, like a bag of M&Ms. That's what they do. I'm like, it's his 70th. You can't buy him M&Ms for his 70th. And my dad's like, you know, and I made sure that we booked a flight and I paid for the kids and I to go back, which, you know, it costs a lot when you've got three kids and you're flying back to Adelaide. So I made sure we were there. He didn't even have a party, but I just made sure we rocked up and we were there. And then I bought in this really nice, like a Tommy Hilfiger watch. And honestly, when he pulled that thing out, he was just like, he couldn't believe it. He goes, I've had this old watch from Hong Kong for like 20 years, the old watch he had. And he took it off and he put on his new Tommy Hilfiger watch. And every time I've seen him, it's been on him since. And like even this week in my house, he's like, see, look, I've still got your watch. And I'm like, God, I know what you're doing. You know, like he might not respect the church and he might not have a relationship with God, but through the generosity of our lives. So my first thing is, this is your hand. What is in your hand? And we're just going to flick past the first scripture that I had. I don't even know who I'm looking at. Oh, the guys in the thing. We're going to go to Exodus 4:2. When God says to Moses, so what's in your hand? And Moses replied, oh, a staff. Now, God knew what was in Moses' hand. I mean, come on, he's God, right? But why did he say it? Because he was trying to show Moses, he was trying to make Moses recognize what was in his hand. Because sometimes what's in our hand seems so familiar to us that we dismiss it as something that's not important. But God's trying to say to him, no, what is in your hand? Have a look at it, because this thing in your hand is actually the key to your future and your destiny. It's actually the key to me doing miracles through your life. And of course, we see later that the staff is, you know, transformed from a snake and back, and it's waved to bring on the plagues, and he strikes the rock and the water comes out, and he uses it at the parting of the Red Sea. This thing that he thought was just commonplace, because why did he have it in his hand? Because he was a shepherd. He'd been using it to shepherd the flock of his father-in-law. It was the tool of his hand. Let's look at 1 Samuel 17:40. Here we're talking about David, and again, and his sling was in his hand. He had something in his hand that ended up being used for something miraculous. It was the tool of a shepherd. He'd learned to use it well in the small place when no one was looking, right? Like, it's like teaching for me. It's not this glorious job. I can stand up. In January, we run a conference of like 3,500 young people. And the very next week, I'm sitting in a staff room with 40 people doing PD with all the teachers, learning how to teach maths and, you know, behavior management for this year. And I sometimes laugh and I love it. Because I'm like, you know what, God, that is keeping it real. I love that on one hand, you know, like if we ever get too big for our boots, you know, that, oh, well, you know, do you guys know where I've just been? You know, I've just been running a conference to 3,500 people. Did you know? Like, I don't even mention it. I just happily sit amongst them because, you know, teaching is my tool. It's the thing in my hand that God's given me. Miriam in Exodus 15:20, Miriam the prophetess took a timbrel in her hand. That's all she had in her hand, a timbrel. I have a confession. I used to take tambourine lessons as a child. How sad is that? My mum actually drove me to lessons, and I even had ribbons on the end of it. And I used to love it. We used to stand in a circle with our teacher and do the banana. See the banana? Shape, right? It was, and you had to get the angle right, and it was just, anyway. Thank goodness that I do not play the tambourine anymore. But however, we see God doing amazing miracles with what Miriam had in her hand, because she used it to lead the women through the parting of the Red Sea. And they were singing and they were dancing. You know, we won't look at it now, but if you went back and looked in Acts chapter 9, it talks about Dorcas, who sewed. She had a needle and thread, and she sewed undergarments for all the widows. And then when she died, they all came to the disciples and said, Dorcas has died. She's, you know, we need her, because she would sew all of these undergarments for the widows. And so the disciples went in and they prayed for her, and she got raised from the dead. And then the whole of Joppa found out, and everyone and people got saved. So who would have thought that just from sewing underwear that people could get saved, right? But we go, oh God, you can't save anyone through sewing underwear, surely. You know, but hey, whatever is put in our hand, it might be familiar to us, but God needs it because it's something that we're familiar with and we're good at. I'll just give you a really quick example. So I write. I love writing. And I did a writing course after I did my teaching course. So I studied it at uni. And anyway, I got a Facebook message in 2012 from this couple from our church who had given up their jobs and were going to try and start a respite facility for children with life-limiting illnesses. So I'm not talking about children with cancer, because there's a lot of funding that goes into children's cancer, but there's not a lot of funding that goes into children who have a life-limiting illness. So what they're always very, very disabled, usually in wheelchairs, usually need oxygen tanks. They usually code blue and, you know, constantly during the night. These parents do not get a break, and these children usually can live up to 15, 16, you know, into their 20s. So they are going to die, but it's not an immediate. And, you know, it's not the most attractive thing sometimes. The children, you know, they dribble, and, you know, at the age of 15 and 16, they're still wearing nappies, which is not so cute as when you're kind of 2 or 3. And so they literally gave up their jobs and felt God calling them to start this respite care facility. And she said to me, could you help me to go and visit these families so we can write stories, the stories down, so we can try and get funding? So I said, yes. So I went all around Queensland. We went to places I'd never heard of in Queensland, like Esk. And we went and visited these people. Some of them, the children were still alive. Some of them, the children had passed away. And I wrote down all of the stories, and I put it all together for her. Anyway, they couldn't get funding. But then I got a message from her a little bit later saying, oh, we can't get funding, but we've been able to take your stories to the Senate inquiry in Queensland in August. So next thing, the stories are going through Parliament. She rings me afterwards and she goes, they were so moved that they have decided to fund us with $5 million. And then if the federal coalition get in, they're going to match it. So this is 2012. And I'm like, wow, cool. Don't think much of it, kind of, you know, don't hear an awful lot. And then a couple of months later, she's like, oh, by the way, your stories have gone everywhere. They'd sent them to Kate Middleton, UK, Prince William's wife, that Kate, right? Clive Palmer, Tony Abbott, like, you name it, they'd read them, right? And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. It's like, who would have thought, right? Anyway, one thing leads to another. Then, you remember when Kate and Prince William did a tour of Australia just 2 years ago? I'm watching TV, and then I see my friends, Paul and Gabrielle, talking to Kate on TV. And then they had a 10-minute private meeting, because she's a patron of a similar facility. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? Next thing, all the funding, fast track to 2016. it's built on in Chermside. It's called Hummingbird House. And they were on the living room on Friday night because the living room came in and just did all of their backyard for them. And I'm like, who would have thought? But you know what? You know, and she said to me, she goes, if it wasn't for those stories, none of this would have happened. But this is the important thing. It's not about us. No one even knows I wrote those stories. Who cares? We have to take our thing and give it to God and say, do what you want with it. Like down in history, who even knows where those stories are? But it's about what God can take and use. So what's in your hand? Secondly, what's in your heart? Proverbs 4:23 says, to above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. See, what's in your hand can only become effective because of what's in your heart. Your heart is what will move and bring power to what's in your hand. You're not going to go and write like me, like, oh my gosh, if you met my husband, oh, you have actually, I think he's preached here at night. Cameron literally can't stand writing. Like if he has to write an email, he'll go, ugh, I want to be sick. Like he literally says that to me. Can you please, like if it's a long email that he doesn't want to write, ugh, I'm going to be sick, can you write it? He never reads, right? He is like the opposite, right? He does not care about writing and reading. Like our kids are just getting educated because I'm the teacher in the house going, you will go to uni, you will go to uni, right? So Cameron's adopted that. He's like, yeah, that might be a good thing. Maybe they should. But you know, so we're all different. It's not in his heart to write, but it's in my heart to write. And, you know, and I'll share a bit more about this tonight, but years and years ago, one of my goals has always been to write things for teenagers. So, you know, we've got a devotion book, which we've got here that we just did, that was just printed earlier this year. Now, it's got Cameron's name on it, but I kind of laughed. I'm like, babe, come on. I actually wrote like literally like 99.9% of that. But he's happy to have his name on it. He's like, you did the ghost writing for me. I literally had to walk around the house and ask him questions. I go, hey, babe, what do you think about this? And quickly jot down what he said so I could put it in the book. That's how much he does not like writing and reading. So, you know, it's not in my heart to go out street witnessing. Bless you if you like street witnessing. Does anyone here like going out street witnessing? Oh my gosh, I'm so in awe of you. I'm so shy of doing that. But it's not in my heart, but if it's in your heart, that's what God has called you to do. So go and do it. You know, it's actually not really in my heart to be a missionary and to go to a third world country. Like if there's a missions trip, I'm like, no, thank you. Other people live for that. We shouldn't feel bad about what's in our heart. God's put that in our heart. And then if we couple it with what's in our hand, it becomes incredibly powerful. What moves our heart is often what motivates us to action. Don't be afraid of the things that move your heart. If you're passionate about something, that's a bit of a key to what it is that God's put you on this earth for. You know, it's thought by the scholars that Dorcas, who was the underwear sewer, it's thought by scholars that she was a widow herself. So here you have, you know, a widow because she understands what it's like to be a widow and she knew what they needed. Someone that's not a widow wouldn't know that they needed undergarments, but she did. The source of your pain often becomes the resource for your ministry. Okay, so the source of your pain often becomes the resource for your ministry. So, you know, I grew up in a broken home. My dad left when I was 3. My mum married again when I was 13. She divorced again. I've got ex-stepsisters and ex-stepbrothers and half-sisters and you name it, that's my life. But the source of my rejection and my pain, that's why I work with young people still. Because I'm like, you know what? Young people need to know because so many come from broken homes. Like nearly half of our nation, and I would say even more, you know, and if they're not from a broken home, they're in a dysfunctional home, and then they go on and they repeat it, and it doesn't have to be that way. Just because something's common doesn't make it normal or acceptable. And so, you know, the source of that pain for me, and so, you know, again, I'd written, it's out of print now, but written a book on that for young girls, and it's another one on my to-do list to redo. But what is it that's in your heart? Mother Teresa said, one must really have suffered oneself to help others. You know, and I know people over the years that they never would have thought their life would take a particular turn for the worst, but in taking a turn for the worst, it's actually been the biggest door of opportunity. So number 3, so everyone's a hand. Okay, we've done that hand, we've done heart, and now home. Now, you've probably really liked me up until this point of time, and I might burst your bubble a little bit now. This is the honest bit. This is the sticky bit. It must start at home or nothing else matters. It must start here in yourself and in your home or nothing else matters. 1 Timothy 3:5 says, if anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? Or how can he go out and be a witness? I'm very passionate about this because when I was living with my mum at home and my stepdad, and there was so much fighting and so much carry on in our house, but we were the Christians. We were the Christians going to church on a Sunday, and we would all pile in the car, fight all the way to church, rock up to the car park and smile, hop out at our church, which was Paradise Influences, all worship, hop back in the car, get to the driveway and start fighting again. Then it would be all over the rest of the week. But it was bad. And do you know, my extended family was so put off of God and was so put off of the church because they saw our family. And I was always so embarrassed. I couldn't do anything about it. I was just the kid in the situation. And I remember thinking, I never, ever, ever want to have a family like that myself. And for me, for myself and for Cameron, one of the most powerful tools in our hand is having a good family and a good marriage and having good children, like children with manners. Children that you can take anywhere and they're a pleasure. Children that don't do laps of a cafe while everyone else is trying to have a coffee. I'm diverting. I could do a whole thing on parenting, but I won't go there. We've just had this couple join our, I can't even say church because it's not a church yet, our little gathering. And they're like, your kids are so good. They're like, my children are 16, 13 and 11. They're like, they interact with people. They talk to people. They're polite. They don't just sit there on their devices. I'm like, yeah. But you know, we have to be an example. Mother Teresa, again, if you want to bring happiness to the whole world, go home and love your family. Your love for one another, John 13:35, your love for one another will prove to the world that you're my disciples. Speak kindly to one another. Don't let your kids speak nastily to one another. You know, like I say to my kids, Dad and I don't talk to each other like that, so you're not to talk to each other like that. Don't excuse them that, you know, oh, you're just your kids, your brother and sister or whatever. Move towards someone who's hurt you. You know, like my dad, I've had so much rejection over the years from my dad. Like my dad, I've had phone calls. He did it again this week where he goes, oh, by the way, we won't buy presents for the older kids. We'll just buy them for the grandkids. But when he says we're not buying presents for the older kids, what he means is my sister and me. But he's got two younger girls, but they're still like in their 20s. But he always buys for them. So like I said to him one day, so what you're saying is, actually, you're not just buying for my sister. And he does it every year. Remember, don't buy gifts. And I'm like, and you know, it really hurts me because I'm like, it's not about the gift. I don't care about the gift. But you don't buy for two of your kids and then not buy for the older two. You just don't do that. But you know what I do? This is my response. I keep buying him stuff. I've bought him a Christmas gift. It's on its way. I bought him that watch for his 70th. I cooked dinner for him every night when he was at my house this week. And he was trying to buy us pizza. I'm like, no, Dad, we're making it for you. You know, so moving towards people that hurt you. Remember people's birthdays. Remember each other's birthdays. Be the first to apologize. Don't hold a grudge. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. I reckon if people live just by that one in itself, just that, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Wow, we'll have a lot more peaceful homes. But, you know, not just our homes, but, and this is where I just wanted to land. If we could have the band back up, this is where I wanted to land right here. It's not just, you know, your hand, heart, home. It's not just how we treat one another in our home, but it's what's going on inside of us personally. Because we get really, really good at being Christian, and I can hear our Christianese, especially when I go out to school and I'm in the secular world and then I come back amongst Christian people. I can even pick a Christian person in the shopping centre. I view it like they wear the hat, you know, the cool hat. I'm like, they must be a Christian. I did that the other day in H&M. I'm like, I reckon that person's a Christian. And then they turned around and I knew them and they were. I could just tell. And that's not a bad thing, right? That's a good thing. But at the same token, we've got to break out of that Christian ease and we've got to be really honest with ourselves about where we're at. And I just wanted us to end this morning by just having a very honest reflection. And I haven't got time to tell the story now, but a couple of years ago, you know, here I am, a pastor and a teacher and three kids and running the national and blah, blah, blah. And I had a panic attack in Audi. Never had one in my life. I'm talking about Audi the shopping, not Audi the car. I do not own an Audi. I was in the doing my groceries and I thought I was going to pass out, and I was like, I thought I had a virus. This is when we first moved to Queensland, and you know, one thing leads to another, and I'm like, my soul wasn't in a good place. You know, the fact that I was so obviously had stressed myself in my mind so much that it led to this anxiety, and it took me a long time to get out of that. But some of us, you know, even as I'm telling that story, there are things in your heart that you go, whoa, I've got some secret stuff that I try and cover up and hide, that you don't want people to know. You know, it might be something in your marriage or a relationship with someone that's not going well. It might be, you know, addiction and looking at porn or drinking too much alcohol, or maybe it's you suffer with depression or you've got some anxiety. You know, God cares about those things, and he's more concerned about that part of you than about anything you go out and do for him. And I just want you to close your eyes. I'm just going to finish by praying over you. Father, I just pray right now, Holy Spirit, for every single person sitting here. And I know that each of us, Lord, have got things that at times we try and hide in our soul. And I just pray that you would begin to breathe life and healing into those areas. I pray that we would not walk away from today going, oh, that was a good message, excellent. But we would walk away going, I'm going to deal with that thing. I'm going to get my heart right, so that we can be more generous with our lives and prompt more people into finding you. I pray for anyone here right now that hasn't got relationship with you. You know, I've been up here talking, and I just pray for anyone, Father, who, Lord, maybe they're away from you or they've never had relationship with you. I pray, just let them know right now how loved they are, that you see them. Just with our eyes closed and our heads bowed, just give people a bit of privacy. If there's anyone here and you would say, you know what, I don't even have a relationship with God like you're talking about, or maybe you did a long time ago, but you've kind of walked away in your heart from God, I just want to pray for you. If you could just slip your hand up and I'll see it. No one else will see it. It's just between you and myself and God. And I'm just going to pray for you. There's one over there. Thank you. You can put your hand down up in the back. God bless you. He sees you. You might be in a crowd today, but he sees and loves and cares for the one. Is there anyone else today that would say, Renee, please pray for me? Just lift up your hand and I'll see it. Okay. Father, I just pray, Lord, for those people right now that have lifted their hand. I thank you that you see them. You care for them. You love them more than they could ever know. And I just pray that you would come right now, be their Lord and their Savior. I pray, Father, that, Lord, wherever they're at, Lord, whether Father, they're in a place right now where they can't see a way out, I pray the peace of God that passes all understanding right now would cover them and guard them. And I pray, bless us as we go from this place today. In Jesus' name.